News Radio 690 KTSM presents the second hour of the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. And by Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. And by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Count me as present. Also, I want to count Andrew J. Polk as present. He's running the board in there for us today. Thank you kindly for doing that. He's a legacy kid, as we know. But also, he's the guy that's on the air every Saturday morning ahead of us from 9 to 10 with Talk El Paso. He's now figured out how to take phone calls. And with a singular person, that's not easy to do. But you're ambidextrous, aren't you? You can answer the phone with one hand, talk on the other hand.
See, it looks like an octopus in
there. He's one of those people. So, Andrew J. Polk, thank you for doing what you do to help us out there in the control room there. Okay, now we're going to start the El Paso History Show, second hour.
All right.
With El Paso History Moment, and produced by Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance. Her History Moment today is about how the Pueblo Revolt helped start the town of San Elizario.
One of the four original haciendas in the area, established by descendants of those early colonists, is the Hacienda de los Tiburcios, attributed to Tiburcio de Ortega, a refugee from the Pueblo Revolt of 1680. The hacienda contained 6,000 acres and 200 residents before Apache raids forced its abandonment by 1787. In 1789, Spain sought to protect its interests in the growing Paso del Norte region. A presidio, or fort, named after San Elcear, the French patron saint of military, was established at the old hacienda, and the settlement that grew up around it became known as San Elizario. San Elizario was second only to El Paso del Norte, today's Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, for most of the 19th century. The unpredictable Rio Grande changed course in 1830, placing San Elizario and its neighboring communities on La Isla, the island, between the old and new channels of the river. Following the U.S.-Mexico War, 1846 to 1848, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo established the deepest channel on the Rio Grande as the boundary between Texas and Mexico, and San Elizario became a part of Texas. More history next week on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
Good stuff there. You're also appearing on a regular basis, random run of schedule throughout the 690 week. We got half a dozen of those things.
Which I need to get some more put together.
Get some more going.
Cause I think I'll have time this week.
I heard about Carnation Milk, and I heard about Baca, and I heard about the Truth or Consequences.
Yes.
And you've done, and what other ones were there? I've named four of them, a couple hundred history moments
in the 10 years.
No, but I mean the six that are running additionally.
Oh, my gosh.
In
the
run
trolley,
of schedule.
Cow.
Yeah, the cow, and then... all kinds of stuff out there. So anyway, we've got a lot more to go. But thank you for doing that. Now, you also do this for the History Alliance.
I do. A great organization that's out there preserving history and also has a great Facebook page with a ton of people out there. And they have, you know, the neat thing about the History Alliance is they do great history. They're also activists in preserving our history, which is good in this day and age. Now, also, if you have interest in finding out more about it, give Bernie Sargent a call at 581-7920, and he'll answer all your questions or make up some for you.
Uh-huh.
And another great site we must not forget.
Because in here next week, we'll quiz him on that.
Yes, we will. And it's another great site on El Paso and the region's history and lots of great archive pictures and stories galore is Remember in El Paso When.
BGB.
Managed by BGB, Barbara Given-Bainey. So, you know, you need to give her a holler and check it out. It's a great page.
Well, they got some good moderators out there, all volunteers. Bernie happens to be one of them, but also Craig Hayes, Ken Weiss, Paul Levy, and it's a cast of four.
Yes.
And they cover the schedule. There's a lot of people there that do regular stuff.
Margaret Smith, and she lives in Arizona.
Oh, that's true. She's part of that, too. Yeah. Anyway, and also thank them for that. Bernie, we'll be in here next week, and we'll talk about all kinds of stuff. In the meantime, we got that man on the phone here, and his name is Troy. T-Roy, how you been?
I am well.
Well, good. I managed to knock you off the phone. Thanks for calling back. But we managed to get the Pueblo people behind us, and then they were running down the Spaniards. They made it to El Paso. They took all their good stuff. Apparently, the legend is they took all their goods, and they came to the mission in Juarez. That's where they headquartered. And they had a bunch of soldiers with them, and they had a whole bunch of Indians. And there was a bunch of local Indians, and they divided them all up and spread them up and down the Rio Grande after a while and made the settlements that we now know today. San Lorenzo was over in Mexico. I think it's just a church now. But then they had like six or seven missions, and one of them was the Isleta Mission. That still exists. That's the big one on our side of the river.
Right.
And down the river from there is Socorro. And the next Catholic church down the river that's part of the mission trail is not a mission. It's the Church of the Soldiers, and that's a presidio.
Presidio.
So that's what we got there. So are you ready for a question from someone around there? Here comes.
Absolutely.
His name is Sanchez, I think, and is this George?
Yes, this is that highly paid volunteer at
Howdy.
The museum in San Alisario
and you're
that has been unemployed for 3 months.
Well, you're at the Portales. We just talked about your building.
Well, the Portales and the old El Paso County Jail is usually where I volunteered, but I haven't worked in 3 months. I have been unemployed for three months.
Oh, no.
Do you have an extra set of keys to that jail cell?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, good. What's on your
anyway,
mind? What's on your mind?
I have a question for my friend Troy. Can he hear me?
Or yeah.
Do you have to put me through?
I can hear you. Hi, George. I can hear you.
How you doing?
I am well.
When you got to the point where the Pueblo Isleta from the south were moving Spanish colonists and Native Americans to El Paso, I'm one of those that says that those that came with the first group came willingly. But I've got a real good friend named Jackson Polk that at one time said, no, no, no. They just came to bring the luggage of the Spanish.
They weren't asked.
They would have stayed there. They would have stayed there if they hadn't been forced to come down to El Paso.
All right, George. And I got to defend myself here, George. You brought my name up.
Just a minute. Let me finish the question.
Oh, you're going to keep attacking me. Go ahead.
And then Troy can comment on this. So what I think is that the ones in the first group came willingly because there was even some chiefs that were with them. My 18th great-grandfather, Jacinto Sanchez de Ignew, was 18 years old. He came with them. He was with that group. But what I'm thinking is when De Vargas and I forget who the other governor was that tried to reconquer New Mexico, they tried two or three times. And when they went there, they came back. They were successful, but they came back with prisoners.
Yes.
And I think it's those prisoners that stayed here that convinced all the other Native Americans here that they had come here unwillingly. But anyway, what I wanted Troy to do was comment on that, if he thinks that was the case or not. And I'm going to hang up so I can listen to the radio, okay?
Thanks a lot, George. You take
care, George.
Troy, let me defend myself first, okay?
There
was more than one wave of the Spaniards coming south. They went back up and tried again, like George said. So the point is, yes, some came willingly and some did not.
That's correct. And you're right to point out that we need to look at this not in a condensed version, but that the fact is we have a sequence of events that of course, begin in 1680, but 1681 and 1682 are also important, and then you have time for 10 years. Time is interrupted, if you will, where there is no Spanish presence north of El Paso del Norte. So to the point, the northern pueblos were very supportive and unified in a general uprising under Pope's leadership, but south of Santa Fe, south of the Rio Arriba district, there was very much less support in the Rio Abajo district for the uprising. So northern pueblos were on board, southern pueblos were not. And this accounts for those natives, those Isletans, who left with Lieutenant Governor Garcia and colonists there in the Rio Abajo, as well as further downstream, further to the south, the Piro and the Tom Piro people who were living along the river south of Isleta. So I would say that it's probably fair to note that in the initial exodus to the south, those Puebloan people who did not support the uprising because they feared perhaps retribution from their northern kin, that it would be in their best interest to go south. But now coming back north, you're dealing with Christianized Indians as well, again. And it's not Christianity, of course, is not a welcomed religion in the north. So it's really more complex than just a binary choice, binary observation.
Okay, so the thing was there was more than one attempt to go back up and reclaim New Mexico for the Spaniards. And the first one, I believe, was a couple of years, you said, after the Pueblo Revolt, and it was repulsed in battles,
it was.
Right?
It was. Governor Oterman, who was, I think he really enjoyed the title of governor, but he didn't like the responsibility of administrating and being governor.
Oh, I know people like that in office now.
I mean, he left a lot to the lieutenant governor, and he wasn't a military man, but you know, pride is a very powerful force, and so he was going to defend Spain's honor, and in 1681 go back north with an armed force of men and reclaim New Mexico. And it was futile. The natives were too unified, too numerous, and too organized, and the Spanish show of force was feeble.
Well, to that point, Troy, there was also, they brought in some Apaches, who are normally the enemies of the Pueblo. They came in and helped attack the Spaniards, as well as some of the people from Arizona came over, didn't they?
That is correct, because everyone, if you will, the chum had been thrown into the water, and
chum.
Sharks were swimming around.
Uh-huh.
So this was this moment in time was unique in that traditional enemies, the Puebloan people, who are basically sedentary and agricultural based, versus the Apache to the east and the Hopi and the Zuni to the west,
right,
who are nomadic and warlike. Now, for the first time, even though the Apache, Hopi, and Zuni had been, you know, raiding settlements, the Pueblos along the Rio Grande for years and years, at this moment they had a common enemy,
right?
And they were united, and that was they made peace among themselves, but that did not last very long.
All right. Well, that was going on. What was going on in El Paso? You get all these people coming down. How many? You have numbers on how many Spaniards, how many Native Americans showed up in El Paso del Norte all of a sudden?
You have around 1,500 people is an estimate. Okay. So you basically have depopulated New Mexico of Spanish presence, and as well as a lot of Christianized Indians. A census was taken in 1684, and you have of course the Pueblo de El Paso del Rio del Norte. That's the main. That's El Paso del Norte. As you mentioned a moment ago, you have the Real de San Lorenzo, the Pueblo de Sinacu, Pueblo de Corpus Christi Isleta, and the Pueblo de Socorro. Okay, so you know, we don't have San Elizario. It's not established.
Not yet.
Yet.
Right.
All right. So these are the mission churches that are established downstream from El Paso del Norte.
About a day's ride. Each one's about a day's ride away, supposedly.
Exactly. And you have officially they were referred to as refugee camps. So, you know, just the more things change, the more they stay the same. That term is still very much applicable today. So you have around 1,500 people. Now, conditions are not good. You have the traumatic uprising, the trauma that these people have gone through. Now they're at El Paso Norte, and they have to immediately build shelter. They have to begin planting crops. They build churches. They're trying to regain a sense of normalcy for their lives. and it's not very effective because they're in large part there's no assistance coming from the South, from the metropolis at Mexico City. And that's a real curious part of the entire Pueblo revolt. The colonists were basically occupying a place that for a decade or more was the northern extent of the Spanish frontier.
And they were on their own.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And they were not reinforced with supplies, with any clothing. They were left to their own means.
It's a good thing you can go crops there in the Salada, because apparently that's what saved them.
Exactly.
Okay, taking a break here, Troy. But when we come back, let's talk about why did the Spaniards get repulsed the first time, and did they do a second time? And then 10 years later, they did a third time? Is that what happened? Let's find out.
Yes.
And then the third time was not so violent, and that's what made it most interesting. They actually took a religious attitude on the way back up the third time, and that apparently worked.
It did, and this is going to – okay, I'm looking forward to this talk. This is really where we unpack the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say, and really put it into context of that time. So,
and that's at the stage of where we got today. That third attempt to go back and take the place over was a peaceful event, and it was led by a religious figure. That blows me away, but it worked. Okay, we're taking a break here. Troy Ainsworth on the phone here talking about the Pueblo Revolt of 1680, what happened then and now. And so, it hasn't changed in some respects. Melissa, are you ready for a break? Do you have anybody
coming? I'm ready for a break. I was just looking at the Facebook page. It's amazing. We have 11,897 visitors.
That's a whole lot of people.
Well, I mean,
people that we've reached.
Yeah, people we've reached.
Any more comments from Vince down there in Brown Acres?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
He's got his feet up. He's drinking coffee. He's poured some poured some rum in it by now.
Yeah, I know. It's time for beer.
It's indeed the case. All right, got a caller on hold here, it looks like. We're going to take a break and come back in a minute. 544-5876
or 544-KTSM.
El Paso History TV is now available for free on YouTube.com. Take a look at recent ABC7 news reports by Bernie Sargent on El Paso History TV about Waco tanks, the Franklin Mountains, Concordia Cemetery, and more. The YouTube channel also has more than 100 videos about El Paso history with lectures, documentaries, and various history clips. Go to YouTube.com/El Paso History TV and find out how Texas history begins in El Paso.
A grand in your hand.
That would help out a ton.
Winner.
Amazing.
After winner.
This will be very helpful.
After winner.
Definitely keep me going until I hopefully go back to work soon.
You could be next.
This helps a lot.
Your chance to win $1,000 is coming up. Brought to you by Comfort Keepers. In life, you learn an important message. Your age doesn't define you. You do. Comfort Keepers. Elevating the human spirit. ComfortKeepers.com.
If you want to increase sales and attract new customers, you need to do business online. Keys Digital Marketing helps businesses of all sizes create affordable digital marketing that works. From websites to social media campaigns, we'll find the right strategy to reach your customers all day, every day. Never advertised online before? Not a problem. We do it all so you can focus on running your business. Make the power of digital marketing work for you. Visit us now at KeysDigitalMarketing.com. That's KeysDigitalMarketing.com.
At Tecovas, we make the finest handcrafted Western boots from the highest quality materials, sold only direct to you for a fair price. We did all this so you can have boots. So what's the deal? Didn't know you'd be comfortable in boots? Don't like being taller? Do you hate your feet? What'd they ever do to you? Well, we'll help you all work it out. Open your mind, because the West is now open. Find your pair at Tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com.
The Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco. It's the weekly podcast where two A-list comedians talk about anything and everything.
So I just got in a huge fight with my wife, and she's like, "But you're going to go laugh with Sebastian."
Have you ever, like, self-diagnosed your own x-ray?
Only my teeth I look at when the dentist is gone.
Listen to the Pete and Sebastian Show on the iHeartRadio app.
This is exciting!
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you're stressed, you just don't feel like yourself. New Natrol Relaxia, a full line of drug-free supplements to help you manage occasional stress and anxiety. A special blend of herbals keeps you feeling calm and balanced throughout the day. Because when there's less stress, there's more you. Try new Natrol Relaxia. Learn more at RelaxiaMood.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
They had snuck in the night and committed these murders. Nobody had a clue about a who or a why.
You got eight people dead, and things like that don't usually happen in a small town. I mean, they don't usually happen anywhere. Somebody was trying to send a message. I don't think there can be any doubt about that.
They couldn't have written a more sinister story than what's playing out in Pike County, Ohio right now.
Find the Piketon Massacre on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
News Radio 690, KTSM El Paso.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We're also looking at ephistory690@gmail.com. You want to send us a message there. Facebook, you've got a whole bunch of people, but yeah, we've been reaching
it's
on that.
Busy.
And that's the Facebook page called El Paso History Radio Show. And then that phone number we gave out, we caught one. Esteban's on the phone. We'll get to him in a second. And we will talk about now. Mr. BS is in next week.
Yes.
Bernie Sargent will be back for more A to Z El Paso History. Going to review the history of Labor Day in El Paso. And by the way, Bernie will be appearing today at Pepe's for lunch.
Yes. Yeah,
you're not going to make
I'm
it.
I'm not going to make it. I have something I have to take care of.
I'm not going to make it because I have something I got to do.
But Bernie will hold down
Bernie
the
will
fort.
Be there. Probably be Patricia, maybe Roy, who knows.
Yeah, I know Patricia will be there.
A cast of thousands. So anyway, Bernie's here next week on August 29th. September the 5th, historians Al Borrego and Martha Vera talk about San Elizario Lecture Series and the San Elizario Festival and Conference coming up. Normally they do that in April. It got rescheduled. Here it comes. On September the 12th, architect William Bilhelm will describe the renovation of the Plaza Hotel in downtown El Paso, and he was instrumental in keeping much of the iconic historical items in the renovated hotel. Building manager, I think he's more than a manager, but William Kell will also join us, and he's the guy who runs the place for the company. September 19th is open, but we're looking to maybe do a show on Cleophas Carreos.
That'd be good.
Can you trill that R, Carreos?
Carreos.
Because we found some people this week who knew the guy, and we're trying to schedule that for September 19th. September 26th, Andrea Hutchins and Valerie Venicia from the El Paso County Economic Development Department talk about the new county historic districts, and Janine Young will explain historic markers. So we got a cast of thousands coming up here.
All kinds of cool
what
stuff.
What do you guys?
Oh, and speaking of the conference going on, Conversations on the Camino Real Speaker Series, and it's going to be a public event hosted by San Elizario Genealogy and Historical Society. The first Sunday of the month, starting on September 6th at 4 p.m., the Honorable Consul of Spain, Martha Vera, will kick off the series, and she's got the remarkable story of the Blue Nun, or the Lady in Blue, and her relation to the Salinas Pueblo Missions National Monument.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a story of an 18-year-old sister, Maria de Jesus de Agreda, and she was a nun living in the convent in Agreda, Spain in 1620, and she was known to fall into trances and experience bilocations where she would travel outside of her body to places around the world, and especially here in the Southwest. So that'd be a really amazing story, and definitely put this on your calendar, because Martha does a good job.
Oh, she really does.
She's an excellent speaker.
Good stuff there. Also, just so you know, we have an opening for a sponsor on the El Paso History Radio Show. If you are interested, call us up 544-5876. Leave a message with Andrew, and I'll get back to you during the week. That's an interesting potential. Because we got a couple of people thinking about it, and the first one comes, and they get it. All right, we got T-Roy back here. Roy? T-Roy? I like to call you T-Roy. It's like T-Rex, but it's better.
Very nice. I'll take it any day, my man.
You're surviving?
It's T-Boy. Yeah.
We also have a caller named Esteban who wants to ask you something or tell you something. Esteban, go ahead.
Well, thank you. I'm always interested in the logistics of these type of situations. For example, and I know this is not the topic, but I'm going to preface it with this. I'm always interested in how long it took these people from San Eli in the 1800s to go once a month from San Eli to the salt beds near Cornutus.
Oh.
To bring salt back to San Eli and then some to Chihuahua City.
Not probably a two-day ride by horse, I'm guessing.
That'd
be right. 2-3 days. Yes.
Okay. Because they traveled with buckboards and oxen and mules, just horses.
Oh, yeah.
So, similarly, I'm always wondering, how long would it take people, say a group of 200-300 people, to go from Santa Fe to El Paso along the Camino Real Trail?
We have that answer.
And that would be 1680. Can you imagine 100 years earlier with the first conquistadores?
I think here's your answer.
Traveled from El Paso to Santa Fe. It's a 100-year difference, but I'm sure the technology was a little bit different.
Not back then. They still had the same horses and carts. Am I right, Troy?
You're looking at anywhere between, depending on the size of the party, you know, if it's in the number of carretas, the number of animals, those factors come into play. But from El Paso del Norte to Santa Fe could be up to about a 3-month trip, because you may be traveling less than 10 miles per day, again dependent upon the number of people in the party.
Well, the Pueblo Revolt, they got down here by October, didn't they? They left mid-August.
They did. And they were highly motivated.
Oh yes, they were. They thought they were going to be killed by people coming up behind them.
Yeah. Right.
What month did they leave, and what month did they arrive?
August, mid-August, like the 22nd of August, got down here the early part of October.
That's right.
That's incredible. So was the geography?
It took around 6 weeks to travel from Santa Fe.
How different was the geography along the Camino Real Trail between these times and 1680?
Not much.
Okay, now that's a real good question, because when you drive Interstate 25 and you're driving from El Paso to Albuquerque, and further on north, what you are seeing today is, in 340 years ago, would have been there would have been more grass, first of all. Creosote had not, to my understanding, creosote had not been introduced into this area yet. But it was still an arid stretch of land. The Jornada del Muerto was renowned for its aridity and its lack of any available pools of water, a little more grass, but that's going to be overgrazed later in the 18th and 19th centuries in particular. But still, I mean, as far as the geology is concerned, that's not any different from, you know, 340 years ago to today.
Except,
you know, every once in a while you hear of a group initiate and accumulate volunteers to go on a trail ride to mark a historical time period.
Right.
Has there ever been a group that has tried to start up something like that to go the entire trip from El Paso to Santa Fe?
I have a dream. I have a dream. I want to get somebody to build carretas. I want to find some oxen, and I want to challenge the public. I'll give you 3 days to get to Las Cruces from El Paso and see if they make it. I bet they wouldn't make it.
One of the closest examples that I can think of is in 1986 during the sesquicentennial celebration in Texas. There was a reenactment of a cattle drive, and I think it spanned a distance of maybe 10 miles.
Oh dear!
And it exhausted everyone who was involved. It was hard work. This was terrible. And that's basically, you know, just a 10-mile stretch under, you know, over one day in really good weather conditions. No swollen creeks or, you know, stampeding cattle or anything like that. So to your point, Jackson, I don't know I don't know how hardy the people would need to be to complete that trip.
I would challenge them. If I had too much money, I'd set that up. Esteban, you'd be ready to get on a carreta, wouldn't you?
If it had wheels,
yeah.
No motor.
Well, yeah, no motor, dude. Well, thanks for calling. It was good to talk to you.
Thank you.
All right, you take it easy. Troy, we got to take another break and come back. And this time we'll hit the how did they get back up there and the Spaniards and finally establish New Spain again in New Mexico. We'll get to that in a minute. We do need to tell you a couple of things after the break. Oh, we have Oh, Mitchell's Point. Sammy Sanchez is the Jornada del Muerto. Got its name during the revolt. Well, it got its name because it was out of water. That's on an email he sent in. And also, how in the heck did they ever cross Mitchell's Point? What's Mitchell's Point, Troy? Do you know what that is?
That is a that's near Canada de Alamosa. It's near a huge arroyo, and it's a landmark, a geological landmark there in central New Mexico. We can talk about that when we come back from the break.
Is it west or east of the Caballo Mountains? There's my question, because the Camino Real went on one side, and now I-25 goes on the other. Maybe that's the answer to Sammy. Okay, taking a break. Come back in just a moment. We'll see you after the break.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the one and only margarita from the Cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan, near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
When you have work to do, Four Rivers Equipment has the John Deere to get it done. With a huge inventory of skid steers, compact track loaders, and mini excavators, even the biggest jobs are easy to tackle. And with low-rate financing and big cash discounts, Four Rivers makes it just as easy to own a John Deere as it is to operate. Four Rivers Equipment, your working partner. Visit fourriversequipment.com.
Hi, this is Jay Farner, CEO of Rocket Mortgage. Making the right financial decisions has never been more important. We can help guide you to those right decisions now, when they matter most. Mortgage rates are near historic lows, so when you call 8338-ROCKET or visit us at rocketmortgage.com to start your refinance, you'll be well on your way to saving money every month. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.375%, APR 3.59%. Right now could be a great time for you to take some positive financial steps forward with a cash-out refinance from Rocket Mortgage, which could give you the boost that you're looking for. In addition, we may be able to help you refinance with little or no out-of-pocket costs. At Rocket Mortgage, we're committed to every client, every time, no exceptions, no excuses, giving you the best mortgage experience. Call us today at 8338-ROCKET or go to rocketmortgage.com to learn more.
Rates subject to change. Pay 1.875% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
When you're stressed, you just don't feel like yourself. New Natrol Relaxia, a full line of drug-free supplements to help you manage occasional stress and anxiety. A special blend of herbals keeps you feeling calm and balanced throughout the day. Because when there's less stress, there's more you. Try new Natrol Relaxia. Learn more at RelaxiaMood.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
El Paso's News Radio, 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
All right, we're going to get back to that, what do we call it, that Pueblo Revolt thing? And Troy's still here with it. But we got to tell you first right now, first and foremost, what's going on this week only in El Paso, Inc.?
It's not over yet, but August is on track to be the hottest on record as El Paso sweats through seemingly endless dog days. Is there relief in the forecast?
Also in the ink, why a global real estate firm says El Paso is one of the top emerging industrial markets in the country.
The El Paso Club, longtime private club atop El Paso's tallest towers, has a new big-name operator and is closing for renovations.
Celebrating its 25th year, El Paso Inc. is available for home or business delivery.
To order your copy of El Paso Inc., go online to elpasoinc.com.
COVID-19 has claimed hundreds of lives in the borderland, but there are encouraging signs in the fight against the virus in the borderland. On Sunday, ABC 7 Extra host Soul Signs talks to key players in the fight against COVID-19.
Saul talks with UTEP President Heather Wilson and New Mexico Department of Health spokesman David Morgan. Watch ABC 7 Extra Sundays after ABC 7 News at 10 with host Saul Science.
Saul, we like that guy. He's cool. He's an anchor dude.
Does a good job.
In the nights at 10 o'clock. Okay, and we thank ABC 7 for their support, and they put us on. Your name was mentioned on the TV this morning. Yes, it was.
What did I do now?
You were in a promo that we trade for these guys.
Oh, okay. Well, I was hoping it was something I had done illegally.
No, that was a pretty basic stuff. All right, speaking of basic stuff, this is amazing history. This is Troy. How do you place this Pueblo Revolt in the scheme of history in North America? I think it's huge.
It is, and let's put 1680 into context, or the first half of the 1680s, from a Spanish point of view. By this time, Spain is already aware. They've explored a pretty good amount of North America, but it's primarily not the interior, but the coastal areas, including on the Pacific side. And California at that time, there was Alta, as they refer to it, Alta California and Baja California, which they thought were separated by a water strait, so that Baja California was actually an island. Which it is not. But in the 1680s, there are incredible pressures and threats to Spain in North America. Somewhere north of Alta California are the presence. It's known that there are Russian presence somewhere farther up the coast. In the Mississippi River Valley, you have the French who are making forays further downstream, the voyeurs who are working to trade with the natives all along the Mississippi Valley. You have the English on the Atlantic seaboard, and for the very first time, you have French presence on the Gulf of Mexico in present day in the area of Galveston, Texas. All of this occurring at that time, and also you have the Pueblo Revolt. So Spain is basically retreating in a lot of ways, and it's trying to hold on to a lot of territory, and it simply just does not have the capacity to do so. The terrain is too expansive. So the fact that the uprising occurred at a moment when Spain was relatively weakened, it contributed to the sustainability of the removal of the Spanish frontier from Santa Fe in that vicinity all the way south to El Paso.
Okay, so you had them go up and attempt it by force in about 1682 or 3, somewhere in there. And they repulsed, and then they did one more, or was that it for 10 years?
Okay, that was it for a decade. So Ultraman was not up to the task. Okay, so it required his successor, who was an aristocratic Spaniard. Bear with me. Here's his full name. We know him as Diego de Vargas, right?
Okay.
The Reconqueror. His full name. Don Diego José de Vargas Zapata y Luján Ponce de León y Contreras is his full name.
Oh, my. Okay. Let's call him. How about we just call him George or something?
By his friends. Call him Jim
or Jack. Okay. But yeah. But finally, the Spanish got it figured out to go back up there. But they went back up there, and this is what blew me away when I figured this out. They went back up there and led the procession into the Pueblos in a religious ceremony, not with soldiers. Okay. Talk about that.
That's right. Okay, so you have an icon, a wooden statue, basically 2.5 foot tall statue,
Madonna,
of the Our Lady, the Madonna. That's right, and she, in this instance, she is La Conquistadora. She is the Lady of the Conquest, and this icon carried on in the tradition of Spanish soldiers going into battle bearing banners and wooden statues of religious iconography to defeat the Vandals, the infidels, you know, the Moors and whatnot. So it's the same principle. Now, the irony is La Conquistadora
at the head of the procession, Don returning in 1692, going back north to reclaim New Mexico for Spain. The great irony in my mind is that he led a military procession under the, of course, under the pretense of peacefulness, and it was successful. But he chose a symbol that the natives had already, you know, rejected outright. The return was fronted by the church. Well, the natives had already rejected the Catholic Church. They had rejected Christianity out of hand. So it was. It's really a historical irony, but it was successful. That's really the interesting angle here. It was initially very successful in 1692 and in 1693, and you can bet that Diego de Vargas had to do a lot of diplomatic work to convince the people who had repelled his people only 12 years earlier that we come in peace, we will coexist. Initially, this worked. Initially, there was an agreement and an understanding among the people. But again, Mother Nature interferes. 1693, we begin to see the beginning of a lack of rain. Crops begin to fail. There is the reintroduction of diseases that have not been present for a few years. And by 1696, this is really the pivotal year. Everything could have been lost for the Spaniards in 1696. It was a violent and bloody year, and it's really the last year of the Pueblo Revolt. At that moment, there were attempts for another uprising, very much in line with what had happened in 1680. It did not occur.
And Pope was gone. Pope himself was gone by this time, right?
That's right. That's right. So you do not have the leadership, and there is not the uprising that occurred 16 years earlier. So 1696 is really when Spain cements its hold on New Mexico. And just so that so listeners are aware, and we can't think in terms of present-day boundaries of New Mexico and Texas, in terms of what the Spanish considered New Mexico. New Mexico was basically everything along the north-south corridor between El Paso del Norte, that district, all the way to north of Santa Fe along the river, with an arm projecting out to the west, out toward Acoma, for example. So Texas, in the Spanish mind at that time, was basically around Espiritu Santo de Goliad, San Antonio de Bayar, and the missions over near the Sabine River, which is to keep an eye on the French. You know, the pesky French are over there in that part. So Texas was far to the east, and west of San Antonio de Bayar, that was basically Comanche area in Apache country. So New Mexico was this amorphous shaped, you know, map along the Rio Grande, and Texas was far to the east. That's why New Mexico has always, El Paso is traditionally been part of New Mexico.
Oh yeah, and if we were in New Mexico now, the senators would all come from here. But that's just a fact, I think. But the thing was that you had this uprising quelled, but by leading this Madonna figure into each of the pueblos, they didn't all go peacefully, but most of them did, right?
Most of them did. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to have resistance, but it's not as pervasive and broad-based as it had been in 1680.
But the other thing that occurred was that the Spaniards said, "We're going to make you a deal for your land." And they gave them land grants, right?
We have the beginning of that recognition, yes. And that was truly to pacify natives. But that offer was also made. Now, keep in mind, Diego de Vargas shows up at El Paso del Norte. And to his aristocratic sensibilities, this place was miserable in the main.
Oh, yeah.
And the people who were there, you know, they're destitute. They do not have good clothing. Their buildings are made of mud bricks. This is not Mexico City. But Diego de Vargas, in his attempt to encourage resettlement, many of the people he was talking to had been displaced, and they had witnessed for themselves the violence. They were not inclined to return until he made the offer for land. And that's where you have a comparable offer being made to resettle with Spanish descendant people in a land where you're also going to acknowledge Native Pueblo rights.
And that's why today they have casinos.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, that it is.
That's my right to get your money.
It sounds like a joke, but
no, it's not. It's exactly where they got their authority to run their show. All right. Speaking of shows, we got to take another break here. Troy Ainsworth, back in a minute, and we'll talk about some of the bigger pieces, overlooking things that this turned into. Back in just a moment.
Visit Mission Del Rey Southwest for a huge selection of El Paso souvenirs and gifts. Mission Del Rey features El Paso saddle blanket products and thousands of Southwest, Western, Native American, and Mexico items for gifts and decor. Bring your friends and mention you heard us on the radio for a store-wide discount. Mission Del Rey Southwest, 1421 Lee Trevino, enter on Pelicano. Go to missiondelrey.com or call 915-440-2140 for Mission Del Rey Southwest.
If the next step for your business is finding a high-impact hire, try Indeed. Their flexible payment options mean better bang for your buck with no long-term contracts. Indeed will even give you a $75 credit for your first job post at Indeed.com/high-impact. Terms and conditions apply.
Your health can't wait. Doctors say now more than ever is the time to guard your heart health.
I'm Dr. Mohamed Talib, cardiologist with El Paso Heart. Shortness of breath, chest pain or pressure, odd heartbeats, and swelling of your arms or legs are all symptoms of heart disease. El Paso Heart Center physicians are here to answer your questions and help protect your heart. Do not delay. Your safe care is our priority. To make an appointment, call 1-855-93-HEART. Again, that's 1-855-93-HEART.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Attention all women who have been diagnosed with ovarian cancer. Johnson & Johnson's baby powder and shower-to-shower talcum products have been linked to ovarian cancer. In February and May 2016, Johnson & Johnson was ordered to pay $72 million and $55 million by two juries to two women who contracted ovarian cancer after years of using talcum baby powder products. If you or a family member has been diagnosed with ovarian cancer and used talcum powder prior to the diagnosis, call Talcum Powder Help Now today at 800-833-0112. You may be entitled to substantial compensation. The consultation is free and you'll pay nothing unless there is a recovery in your favor. Don't fight this alone. If you or a loved one used talcum baby powder-based products before being diagnosed or died from ovarian cancer, call Talcum Powder Help Now at 800-833-0112. 800-833-0112. 800-833-0112.
Paid for by Bar Justice.
Would you get on an airplane if you knew it had a 50% chance of crashing? You may be riding that plane right now. If you have your money in a 401k or IRA and you plan to take out the recommended percentage each year when you retire, your chance of running out of money is 50%. 50%. But there's a better and safer way to secure your income in retirement. Discover how in a free book called Rescue Your Retirement. This wealth building strategy has never had a losing year in more than a century. In fact, even the man who invented the 401k now prefers this method instead. Get Rescue Your Retirement free for just a small shipping charge and enjoy a safe landing and a comfortable retirement. Get this free book and make sure you don't run out of money. Hurry, this offer is extremely limited. To get your free copy, just go to growwealthsafely.com. That's growwealthsafely.com to discover how to rescue your retirement. growwealthsafely.com.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso Souvenirs and Gift Shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Well, Troy, we got through a whole lot of history of El Paso and New Mexico in 2 hours. And normally that would take about, 2 decades to get through all that. But thank you for doing that. The sum total to me is that the it was the major revolt of anything that American Native Indians ever did that was successful. Yeah. The only one, right?
It is the only one that was successful for any stretch of time.
And
that's right.
And it's still successful because they got the casinos, like we said. So, and the reason, again, that El Paso didn't quite go with them, because when Lincoln recognized them during 1862 or so, he recognized the territory Native Americans in New Mexico, in the territory of New Mexico, yeah. But he said, I'm not touching those guys in the Confederate state of El Paso in Texas. So
Lincoln sent a silver capped wooden cane to each of the pueblos, to the leaders of each of the pueblos. And it was an acknowledgement that the United States government recognizes the Pueblo sovereignty. And that's also when he said in his State of the Union address in December of 1863, where he made acknowledgement of what the action had been, but he made the same reference that Spain had attempted, and that is the native peoples, while we recognize their sovereignty, we also recognize that they need to be introduced to the arts and crafts, the culture of the white race, and introduced to Christianity. So it was really a repeat of what Spain was trying to introduce in Oñate's time in the 16th century, 17th century.
And the Indians, really interesting. And the Indians went and did whatever they wanted anyway. That's the way it goes.
They rejected. They liked the cane, but did not like the religion.
And there that's why they got what they got. Troy Ainsworth, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been very interesting. And good luck with your adventures in Las Cruces. Well, you are the preservation officer of the city of Las Cruces, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks again, Troy.
I made you a director. Sorry about that.
Oh, director. Melissa, we're coming back.
I'm promoting you.
No worries. No worries.
We're back here
good
next
to
week.
Good to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you,
take
Troy.
Care,
you
take
Troy.
Care. Tell everybody hello.
Next week, Bernie's back. We'll see you all then. Thank you all very much. You take her easy.
Next week. Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon, and be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Monterey Asset Management, Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. And by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. Thank you for joining us from the studios of New